Pamela Ochoa. My question for you today is, if there were no district guidelines to this, if they just asked you and you got to dictate this, how many in a grading period, let's say 6 weeks, how many daily grades and test grades should there be, and why?
If there are no guidelines at all?
Yeah, like if there's no, like, if it was up to you and you got to do whatever you wanted to in your classroom, what would the numbers look like?
Well, I would have to consider what's best for the kids and what I can do. Because what's best for the kids is the more daily grades they get, the better chance of passing they get. So I would try to get as many daily grades as I can, but it's not going to be daily grades like pieces of paper that they turn in all the time. So my daily grades, it just depends. Are we doing reading and writing, or are we just doing English? What does that, because that matters too a little bit.
You're doing English, so reading and writing.
Reading and writing. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I would try to make sure that my reading grades were actually reading grades. So I could typically get in at least, I could do a daily grade a day, but I would probably, let's see, how many days are in there? Six. Okay. So I don't know. I'd probably do a minimum of 12 daily grades, a minimum. I'd probably try to have more than that, but my daily grades would not be like where they turn it in and I have to spend a lot of time grading. A lot of my daily grades, hello, I don't know how to talk today. Daily, it must be the rain. Daily grades would come from their notebooks. And so, you know, because we could do the craft and draft. So I would have a craft and draft. And so the reading grades would be about reading comprehension. It would also invite the daily grades would be about for reading would be about, you know, are they reading when I ask them to, are they, you know, like I would look at their responses to their reading and I would just make sure that they did what I asked them to do. And so I would walk around in my conferencing and I would ask them a little bit about what they were reading, show, you know, they would be responding. I'd have them maybe share what their response is. And so while they were maybe doing the next activity or reading, I'd be walking around. And in the past, what I did is I had like a date stamp. Because you know how you can have the dates and you can rotate those stamps. And I would put a date stamp on there. And then I would immediately, if I was carrying a tablet with me, I'd probably carry a tablet and that and or my computer. I used to just carry my grade book. What I would do is I would just mark whether they did what I asked them to do. So most everybody started out with the 100. So the way I did that for timely sake is if you didn't do what I asked, or if you only did like maybe 50% of what I asked, then I would write a 50 in there. And then, you know, or something like that, or an 80 or whatever. I always wanted to help with the kids. So what I would do then is if I didn't write anything down, then you probably got a 100, because that was the easiest way to do it instead of writing all those 100s down. Because most of the kids really pretty much did what I asked them to do. And that was on the daily grades. The test grades, that's your equalizer. That's a great equalizer. And so my test grades, I would say you need a minimum of three every 2 weeks, a minimum of three test grades. That would be something. But if you could get four in there, that would be more helpful. At least two reading grades and two writing test grades, or you can combine it however you want to do it. Now on the writing grades, I would also go around and stamp their notebooks. But like if I asked them to write 10 minutes of writing or something like that, I would go around and see if they did it. If they did it, that would be a nice grade. It's not always a matter of did they do it accurately in this sense. It just depends on what I'm grading for. So like on those types of things, I'm looking for volume. I'm looking for, did you actually do it? Those types of things. Now, let's say they didn't have anything there because they were busy thinking. Well, I'm also kid watching. And so I'm looking to see. And so then I would ask them, okay, so today I didn't see you get very much down, but tell me what you were doing during that time. Tell me about your thinking processes. Did you have an idea? What was your struggle? And so through that conferencing, I would do an assessment. And then I would write that down in my grade book via hand. I usually carried a hand grade book personally. And then I'd enter it into the grade book, you know, with the computer or what have you. But I would walk around and I had notes and stuff. And so that's kind of where I would get that. So, but the more work they did, it would just be a lot of work. I mean, the kids, when it was over, like if we turn and then like their actual daily, I mean, test grade for writing would be their actual final product, what they actually turn into me. And then I would go through and I would check, did they follow all the procedures? And they would get a grade for, you know, their pre-writing, they get a grade for their actual drafting. They get a grade for every time I asked them to go back into the writing. Did they do that? They would get a grammar grade, you know, but a lot of those things I'm checking along the way to give them more daily grades. So the more that I would put in the grade book, of course, the less each one of those daily grades would count. And in the long run would actually help them. So, but that's kind of what I would do if I didn't have any guidelines. I try to get as many in there as I can that's, you know, that's possible, but I would lean towards helping the students. And then most of my assessment would be through conferencing and things like that. I mean, I would just make sure they knew they were actually doing what I needed them to do, but I would try to catch as many as I could that weren't getting it. And I do that by looking at their notebooks and then and conferencing. I did a lot of that with conferencing and I would just, so it's kind of, you know, and then I guess every once in a while we would do something that's less subjective and, you know, cause that's the only thing is it's not as objective. So my objective part would be usually the quizzes and the test, things like that. So, and I don't know. That's what I do. Is that bad? Is that good? Did I answer? I never know.
Only the audience can decide because this is Craft the Draft, ladies and gentlemen. That's Pamela Trump, Jacob Chastain. We're two educators down here in the city of Texas doing what we love, talking about reading and writing workshop and so much more, truly so much more, all over the place. If you enjoy long, meandering conversations, then you are in the right place. That's what we do here. We talk a lot about what we've done in the classroom, what we've seen in the classroom, what we hope to see in the classroom, what we hope not to see in the classroom. And truthfully, we love answering questions. We love interacting with all of you guys. And the best way to do that is to join us over there on Patreon. That's patreon.com/craftanddraft to get bonus videos, bonus content, and truly so much more. And you can join us just like Lori, Susan, Destiny, Nalissa, Courtney, Rebecca, and Leah all have. They support us over there on Patreon just like you can. If you can't do that, subscribe to the podcast. You don't miss any other episodes. We drop them every single weekend. Leave a review if you haven't already. Now let's get to the conversation. All righty, Ochoa. I have we're going to go broad on this one.
Okay. Can you hear what? The rain?
Not here.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I mean, I can hear it outside my window. I have window that doesn't work right. And I can hear it tapping.
That would be perfect background noise for the podcast. Okay. Just a little trickle of the rain. It was thundering like crazy this morning.
Oh, well, my whole yard is flooded. It's just, yeah. I looked out there and it's like, there's no way I can get even back there. It's so flooded. But I was wondering if you could hear it because you can hear it. I can hear it. So I was wondering if y'all could.
No, your mic's not picking it up. Okay. My question, though, is what is an assignment? And the reason I wanted to talk about this today is because it's the assignment to me, your belief about what assignments are affects the kind of teaching what's happening in your classroom. And mm-hmm. So one of the things I've noticed, and I'm navigating in my own work is this, you know, in middle school, I started off teaching where I literally just handed out like kind of printed out assignments often. That was a very common go-to in the form of like a reading passage or something with questions, whether I handmade it or I found it on the internet, whatever, or I got it from a textbook. And then when I evolved kind of into workshop teaching, assignments became a lot more, this is the standard. I'm going to ask a handful of questions with this, or we're going to do a collaborative activity with this, or there's going to be some type of product that you're working on for an extended period of time. And so my idea of what an assignment, specifically in the English classroom, really evolved to be more broad, unless I'm assigning a specific assignment and I'm assigning more, I'm assigning learning or the practice of learning. And then I get to the high school level, and I mean, our campus is so big. There's teachers that do that, and there's also teachers that are very much like, here's the concept, here's your assignment, you work. If you have questions, come talk to me, you know? Yeah. And it's interesting to see, because I think a lot of this has to deal with what is your perception of an assignment? And so I wanted to throw that question to you about just what do you, just on a basic level, what do you see an assignment as? What is the definition in your head without going too technical?
To me, an assignment is something that you ask the students to do that you expect a evidence of their learning. I mean, in other words, you expect to receive it so that you can get a grade on it. But I would say not every assignment has to have a grade. But to me, it's what you expect the students to do in return. I think there's got to be some evidence of an assignment. It's not just sitting around talking. I mean, well, I don't know. That's hard. I think it's just where you give something that you expect the students to learn from, maybe. I don't know. Now that you've said that, why did you make that so hard? I didn't know that was going to be a hard conversation. That is hard. But to me, I don't know. Not every assignment had to be graded. I expected learning to be done and whatever I assign them to do. So even if it's discussion, is that considered an assignment when you have them discuss? Or is the assignment the result of the discussion? Like they have a discussion and then you receive something. I said I know that caused me to think of something from a memory. I sat in not a very good meeting one time. And my cat always comes to talk to me while I'm on here. I don't know why, but there she is. Say hello. There she is. Okay, now let's get her down. Maybe that's enough. But anyway, for memory, it was not a very good meeting that I ended up, I was in high school. And we had that same thing that you're talking about. Like some people would just give out just tons of worksheets. Some people would just have discussions and then they'd have a test at the end. I mean, it was really a big variety of all the different things that the teachers would do. However, we had this one situation where I don't know how to say it, but a teacher was in trouble for showing too many videos. Because back then you'd show movies and stuff. Now they've put a big clamp on it with all this technology. You think you could do more with technology, but they actually clamp you down more, to be honest, because they shut off everything that you can view a video from. But, you know, in the back in the day where you had VCRs and all that, you could just pull in a TV and put a movie in. So this person was in trouble for doing too many movies. I had to be pulled in because I was a liaison between the district and the curriculum and all of that at the time. And I learned a lot. I was very young, but one of the comments that that was asked of her from our principal was, "So what assignment are you doing with the movie?" So showing the movie was not an assignment, according to that principal. It was, what was the result of showing that movie and what were you doing and how did it tie to curriculum? And so that to me, you know, was something that I just, okay, note to self, make sure everything you do ties to curriculum. Just because I didn't want to be in that boat that teacher was in. And I mean, it was just a very big learning experience that I just happened to be in because I said yes to this liaison position. I was also a teacher too in the same department. And so, but anyway, so anytime, so what was decided is that anytime they show a video, it's not that she was showing a movie so much at that point, it was that the kids were just falling asleep during it, or, you know, there was no evidence shown that the kids learned anything. So she said that the assignment had, if she's going to show a movie, and she gets called in again for it, then she better have evidence that the kids did something from the movie that tied to the curriculum. So there had to be something in writing that she could show the principal, or she cannot show a movie. That was at that time the decision that was made. So maybe it's not, maybe that's a good guideline, is that it's got to be something that is, I mean, you can do something like a discussion or something like that, but there has to be some evidence that shows the learning that's tied to the objective that you're trying to teach. So maybe that's an answer of what is an assignment.
Yeah. So I Googled this.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, just they have all curiosity. The answers. Okay.
So what'd you find? This one, and this comes from, well, this is just the first hit that pops up. I don't even know how to pronounce the name of this website, but says an assignment is a piece of academic work or task. It provides opportunity for students to learn, practice, or demonstrate they have achieved the learning goals. It provides evidence for the teacher that the students have achieved the goals. I think that's an interesting definition, because here's, and the reason I think it's good to kind of talk about this is because I think we get stuck in, especially, and I think this is another, I think this existed before everyone was doing kind of digital learning platforms and everyone was one-to-one, but I think it's more prevalent now because kids have to turn in something in order to get that little checkbox in whatever LMS they're using, right?
Yeah.
So I think that it's training people to think that an assignment is always something you turn in, which I think that, I mean, that's fine, but I think that there's, you know, from our definitions and from what you said and from the definition I just kind of read, I think, I mean, an assignment could be a collaborative activity that you're using to use to, you know, you're writing on whiteboards, or you're writing on, you're using sidewalk chalk to answer, or you're, you know, crafting something or making something. Mm-hmm. And so it's super broad. And so it just becomes the idea of, well, I guess the, it's like, to me, an assignment is, what are the kids learning? And what is the skill that I'm trying to assess? Am I trying to assess their ability to recall information that I specifically taught them? Am I trying to assess their ability to use the information that we've gone over or learned and synthesize it into something to show me their mastery or understanding or lack of? Am I just wanting them to practice, which I feel like is very common in grammar work or like math work? It's like, okay, well, we know this concept in math, so let's do it 10 times to make sure that you can kind of think through it in all variants. I think we do that a lot in grammar. And I think, but that's the interesting thing, is I've never seen, well, that's not true. I was about to say, I've never seen like curriculum documents that specifically say, this is what you need to do. But if you think about it, if you're looking at standards, the verb is telling you what you need to assess, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is saying analyze, then your assignment should have to, they should be analyzing in the assignment, whatever that assignment is, whether it's on paper, on a whiteboard, in something they're writing, if, whether it's verbal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has the assignment that you ask them to do, the practice or whatever you want to call it. I think it's important that it does tie back to the objective that you're trying to teach. And so that, you know, call them standards, call them whatever you want, but it's, or the goal, the learning goal. But yeah, I think if you say analysis, and you have to have analysis in there. When I was an academic coach, which you and I both were, there was a lot of disconnect between what their learning goal was for the teacher, you know, what the objective was, and what they were actually asking the kids to do. And that was a good area as a teacher, is to go back and actually, you know, self-evaluate, and that, or self-reflect, and just say, okay, is what I'm asking them to do really what I want them to do? Are they really doing that? And we used to go in and do that quite a bit as an academic coach, and then we would sit down and discuss it. But I, yeah.
See, I think that's, I think that's a good practice. I mean, it's, and to really make sure that you're aligning to what you're asking kids to do. Because I found like this is true. Every team I've ever worked on has stumbled onto this in one way or another, which is if you're teaching something and kids seem to be getting it, but then you assess them, you do a test, especially a test that you didn't write, and you're like, man, they all bombed it. I guess they didn't learn it. It's like, well, not necessarily. You might not be teaching it the way it's being assessed, which is what happens often. When you're not standards aligned, and if you're a school or a district that or a state that has to focus on standardized tests, if you're not aligned to those standards, your kids are going to bomb that standardized test, which is what happened over and over again at my very first campus, because teachers were just kind of teaching, and they were teaching well, but it wasn't teaching at the rigor of the test.
Right.
And I don't think everything should be that. Like, this is where it's the common, you have to always ask yourself, you know, with your PLCs and with yourself is, you know, am I really getting whatever I'm asking kids to do? Is it really telling me something that they know? Is it really adding to my variety of data that's teaching me about what my students know or don't know? That's really the hard question, because I think there's a lot of filler in classrooms. I think there's a lot of filler. And you know, what's funny is we talk about, we have a lack of time. We have a lack of, you know, there's just not enough time in the day to get everything done. I would be willing to bet that if people truly analyzed everything they're asking kids to do, there's a lot of filler they could cut out. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is an interesting conversation, because that's what I ended up doing. You know, I've talked a lot about, like, I really went from very basic, typical, I don't know what I'm doing teaching, to out of the box, kind of over the top, to this very much like, we read and write in here, and we're going to switch that up and do some different things and do some different activities and whatnot. But for the most part, we're reading and writing. And that's what we're going to enjoy, because I just taught kids to love the actual practice of what we were doing. It's like, you're going to love writing because you're connecting to it. I'm not controlling a lot of it. I'm going to push you a little bit. I'm going to teach you some different things. I'm going to hold you accountable for some different things. But ultimately, it's yours. And so kids got attached to it. And then for reading, it's, yeah, we're going to read some stuff together. But for the most part, you're going to be reading your own stuff. We're going to talk about it. It's going to be low pressure. You're going to not read and say, I hate this book. And guess what? I'm going to give you 100 books. And it might take us till April to get you to read something. But by golly, we're going to get there. And so kids end up falling in love with reading, at least 99% of them in a classroom. And if they don't fall in love, they at least learn that they don't hate it as much as they thought they did.
Right.
And so,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
You finish. Finish your thought.
I was just going to say, like, that became, it became me. That was my version of cutting the fat. I was like, why do I have to do so many different quizzes? Why do I have to do so many things that don't give me real information? I just started looking at my stuff and I was like, what does this tell me? I was like, if I have my kids write for 30 minutes today and I conference with as many of them as possible, is that going to give me more information than telling them to do something? Most of the time it was yes. Sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes if we were really working on a specific structure, I needed to say, hey, we're going to do this. But a lot of the time it was honestly me going, yeah, this assignment sucks. Let's get to application. Let's get to synthesis. And it really just shifted the dynamic of things. Anyway, ask your question.
My question was, so what's your definition of filler?
That's a good one. So, I mean, truthfully, my gut reaction is to say any assignment that's filler is anything that's not really extending your knowledge as the teacher of what they know or can do. Now, that gets a little gray when you start talking about practice, because I think practice is good. We've said often that you don't, kids need practice doing certain things. You don't need practice grading.
Right.
No
right.
teacher on the planet needs practice grading.
Nobody wants to, I don't think.
Right. And so can practice be filler? I think it can be seen that way, but you have to have a reason for your practice, right? If you have a specific reason as to, hey, my kids are really struggling with figurative language, we're going to do a quick 15 sentence figurative language activity or some type of activity that has to deal with it. That's very kind of specific. And just to get them used to seeing things like when you and I, for instance, when, you know, we had to do heavy star tutorials at the campus we were at, what our principal wanted, and there was really no negotiation. And so we had to do tutorials morning and evening and sometimes midday.
Right.
But a lot of that was practice, right? A lot of it really was kids just need to see these questions over and over and over and over and over again and see this vocabulary over and over and over and over again, because there is a place for that. So I'm talking in circles. What is filler? Truth, honestly, like I'm just going to go with, I think filler is anything that's that you really can't argue. It's like there's if it's a repetitive task. What's your reasoning for it? Why do they need to repeat this test so many times? There very well may be an answer. If it's just an assignment that you're throwing out there because you feel like everything needs an assignment, I don't know. I mean, I've had days, Ocho, I don't know about you. I've had days where I've taught a concept and then I really didn't tie anything that they were working on to it necessarily. We just taught it. We learned it. We discussed it. And then we went to reading and writing as we went. And so that's even kind of a foreign concept, I think, is not tying an assignment to every single thing you teach. That's something I learned from Jeff Anderson. He was like, what's his name? Ralph Fletcher. He talks about that in his original, you know, tiny little writing workshop book. He says, don't worry about making every concept appear in their writing that day.
Right.
He was like, it happens over time. You're going to circle back to these. These are cyclical things.
Well, that's why when I'm teaching English, that's why I have to go out and look, you know, go out and look and see what they're actually writing on the day and then actually asking them about it and doing the conferences. Because like Ralph Fletcher, if you're really asking them to write, they're not going to do every little bitty thing because what they're writing may not call for it. But if they are... You know, that's why I like what we do in the, and you're the one who came up with this, and that was having the students reflect and tie back. So in your writing, what lesson tied to that writing, what standard tied to that writing that you used from one of your prior lessons? And so the kids are having to reflect and see what they're actually using. And, but they might not all do it on the same exact day. And that's why going out there, that's why I would stamp it with a, you know, I kind of I lost that stamp somehow in one of my moves, but I did used to do that where I would stamp it because the date stamp would let me know when they actually did it. And, you know, and that was helpful to me at the time. But the reason also why we go out is because there was so much work because we wrote in our notebooks every day. There wasn't a day that, I mean, they brought that. I didn't have to worry pretty much about most of the students losing their notebooks because we use them every day. Every day we use their draft, you know, their craft and draft books every day. So I never really had to worry about that. But I tried it through the years with journaling and all that stuff, taking their books home with me and grading everything. That's one of the first things that I, you know, tried. And then, you know, and then as I got older, it was like, I cannot take, and plus if I accidentally left them home or I didn't get them all graded, then I got to hand them all back out and then I have to take them all back up again. And then that got annoying. So going out and grading their work as they're doing it was more efficient for me and more immediate because students need immediate feedback. That's one of the problems with a turn it in assignment is they don't get immediate feedback like that, like they would if you're going out and assessing as they're doing.
I agree with that. For people who don't know, you know, one of the ways I did that, which I still think it's an amazing thing to do. I'm sure there's other apps by this point. Mm-hmm. One of my solutions was Notability. And I swear by I'm just not an organized person. And so having an iPad and then using Notability to where I literally had each class or each block, and then I had all the kids in there, listed. And so every time I met with a kid, I could make a new note, and I made an individual note every single time. Because what that did is it tallied up how many conferences I was having, but it showed me a quick glance of, oh, I've talked to this kid this many times, but I've only talked to this kid like once this 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was data for myself just to check myself to make sure I was hitting all the kids I needed to. I could write really great notes. You could also take pictures on it. So I could take pictures of student progress. I'm a very big proponent of not writing on student work unless, you know, you specifically ask, or, you know, you kind of have set that up to be a part of the class. And so I would take pictures of their work and we would write together on the iPad, and I would give the kids the iPad to let them write on it or edit. I had kids that would write, you know, in sixth grade, you know, the essay that's just like one block, right? There's no paragraphs or anything. And so I would take a picture of it, and I would let them highlight where they think the sentences should be and where the paragraph breaks are. And it gave me so many ways to track conferences and whatnot, but it gave me so many ways to do what you're talking about, which is really assess in the moment. And I think that's a key definition or a key factor of what workshop teaching is the, mm-hmm. it's you're in the workshop. Kids are working through workshopping through concepts, ideas, pieces. And so you are in there with them. And that's not the same thing as just answering questions. If a kid's confused, then going back to your desk, it's really sitting with them, talking about their thinking, talking about, you know, what's your big idea in this? Why, you know, why is this sentence weaker than this sentence? How do we really pull this together? How is your analysis kind of falling short here? And really thinking through that as a coach rather than an arbiter of knowledge. And I think that, to me, that's the such a superior way to gather information in reading and writing. And I know you and I are biased because we love workshop, but I think that it's the immediacy is what's important, and your immediacy to give feedback and to train kids to be open to feedback. Because one thing that I think is a great characteristic of kids in workshop, especially if they've never been in one, is they feel very self-conscious. They get into your workshop and they want to perform, right? In sixth grade, you have kids coming up, at least in our district, we would have kids come up and they'd be like, all right, we're going to write about this. They would write for 30 minutes and be like, I'm done. I've written the best essay. And then you look at it and it's that perfect little fourth grade, the essay they learned in fourth grade for the STAR test, the little, you know, five paragraph essay, 26 lines. It's, how did I meet my best friend? Let me tell you. And kids, they just mastered that and they were just so proud. And then what we would do as workshop teachers is break that mold and break that concept and really start them to start thinking of, no, I don't want your formula. I want you to write what you care about. And then we'll figure out what that looks like. And that is such a unique form of an assignment. But for me, what it did though, like when we're talking about, you know, what is an assignment, it's, we're talking about learning, we're talking about really processing, we're trying to grow them as writers. That's a nebulous concept by nature. How do I tell you that you're a better writer? Do I just look at your mechanics? Do I look at your ideas? Do I look at how you manage from one paragraph to the next? What defines a better writer from the other? How do you pick up a book off the shelf and go, this writer's better than this one? There's a lot of disagreements on what that means. There's the snooty answer, and then there's the personal answer. So in a classroom, how do you judge that?
Do you always give the snooty answer? I just want to know.
Not always. Not always.
I see you giving snooty answers.
I do. I mean, one of my favorite authors is Charles Dickens, so... I'm definitely in that camp a little bit. I get really kind of grossed out by bad writing, but, I truthfully, like, I think, like, for instance, Stephen King, I don't think he's a particularly great writer, but you can't deny that he's a massively effective writer. He is the horror genre.
Like, right.
Like you go to, you know, Half Price Books and go to the horror section. It's him. It's him, Anne Rice, and Clive Barker are like the three. And now, right, I guess Stephen King's son, Joe Hill. So he's one of the best-selling authors of all time. J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter and all of her other stuff. I don't think she's a particularly amazing writer. I think she has really great ideas and she demonstrates them in highly effective ways. But those people don't hold anything to someone like Patrick Rothfuss, who wrote Name of the Wind, who's a fantasy writer, but just an astounding writer in general, or Ron Chernow, who wrote the Hamilton biography. Like, those guys just write on a astronomically better level to me. But that's, it's like, if you ask me to define that, I would be hard pressed, right?
Okay.
And so that, as a writing teacher, though, to get back to what the assignment looks like, is your goal to get them to do something very specific, like create a thesis statement? If it is, cool. But I think when we're talking about writing, we're talking about such a broad range of skills and capabilities and whatnot that you have to be in the trenches with them and always kind of gathering data and really being in there with them. And kids have to be writing a lot to even have exposure to those things. And so an assignment in the workshop to me is, are you working on what we're learning? Are you applying what we're learning? Are you demonstrating what we're learning? If the answer is yes to all of that, then the assignment's good. If the answer is no to that, then I need to figure out what's kind of going on and shift accordingly. Thoughts?
No, I agree with you. And I think that's why when I said you got to get out there with the kids, I mean, you just said exactly why you need to do that. That's pretty much how, you know, I would break things down. So like, I mean, if we were working, you mentioned thesis statement, then I would have the kids write first, then I'd teach them thesis statement. Then we go back into their own writing. And I may have them, you know, analyze some thesis statements first. And then that would be, to me, that might be a grade. I might, especially if I need a grade, I might go out there. Did they analyze the thesis statements and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, what I really want them to do is apply it in their writing. So then I would have them go back into their writing. Especially if we were doing informational texts, I'd have them go into one of their informational texts where you need a thesis statement. And I would say, okay, go back in and look and identify your thesis statement. And if they can't do that after analyzing thesis statements and knowing what one looks like and taking notes on it, we're looking at several, and then they go back in their own writing and they're like, I mean, it's amazing how they go in and now they're the analysis. I'm not the one doing it. I think that's the, if you will, the beauty in the way that I felt like I did things, but educators who don't do it like that, like my principals would come in sometimes and they'd go, no, you need to have them do this worksheet, you know, or other teachers. No, we're going to do this worksheet on thesis statements. And we're going to do, you know, we're going to write it in this box 100 times, whatever. But I kind of did it in a different way. And that was, so they would go back in and the beauty of it is that they would analyze their own writing. I'm not the one analyzing their writing at this point. They're analyzing their own writing. They're searching for a thesis statement based on what I have taught them about thesis statements, based on their own discussion in class where they're actually having a discussion on which of these six are the best thesis statements and why. And so that would be an assignment. So now they go in, they look at their own and they go, they'll either highlight it and go, this is it, but it needs work to be like one of these. Or they go in and go, Ms. Ochoa, I don't think I have a thesis statement. Can you come over here? I need help. I don't know where my thesis statement would be. And then now they are actually prompting a conference. And their conference is about thesis statements, which is what I'm trying to learn. And now I could go in and help them. And we can pick one of their sentences, or I can have them individually write their own thesis statements. And typically I would have them write maybe three thesis statements, the one they already think they have in their paper. And I'd have them do two more based on some of the things that we talked about in our lesson. And then they would pick the one that fits their paper the best, or which one says what they want to say the best, which one's going to give the promise to the reader that they feel that they want to achieve. Like, so those are the kinds of things that's how I would do. And so if they did all of those steps, now I could break that down into several assignments and give them grades, especially if I'm in need of some grades. And the reason I say I'm in need of some grades is because of what you said at the very beginning of my question. And that is, if there are no district guidelines, well, we know for a fact that's a perfect world for a teacher. No guidelines. You can do whatever you want. But the reality is there's always a guideline. And so sometimes we've been working really hard and I need a grade. And so I go back into their work and I say, well, we did this, they did that, they did that. Let's go out and look. And I'll look for those things. Are they actually applying the thesis statement lesson? You know, did they make corrections? Did they? So that's like three different parts. They get 30 points for each one of those. I, you know, give them a little grace for the 100 there. They got their 100 or they've got their 90 or whatever. I can just go through. And I mean, the best way to do that is when you set up an assignment of any kind, you already have your rubric. So if you have a rubric that you're following, it's real easy to kind of go in. If you already know what you're wanting and what, and you consider, and this is what we used to do in our PLCs. I think you know this, and that would be where the teachers would get together. These are the kinds of things we're going to talk about, thesis statements and how they need to be in their writing. Which one is a high level, middle level, and a low level? And then from there, you can set up your ABC. And if they don't meet that, well, then it's an F, because apparently we got rid of the D's a long time ago. So that's the whole way of doing it. So if you already have discussed it, even with your friends, your teachers, even with yourself, you've figured out what you want the kids to be able to do. You've looked at your standard, you know the objective, and they're meeting it. So when you go out there with the kids, you're not just going blind. It's not like, hey, I like this kid and I think he needs to have, oh, this kid's really worked hard. I mean, that may play a role in it. But did they actually create a higher level thesis statement than what they originally wrote? And were they able to analyze and figure that out? Well, now if they've done that, you kind of figure out which one's the high, which one's the middle, and which one's the low, and you have a good basis for your grading system. But that's pretty much how I would go about getting my grades. And I would tell the kids what I'm doing. I never did it blindly. I always told the kids, this is where you're going to get your grade. I'm going to come out today, and I'm going to be around in the room, and I'm going to be looking at your thesis statement. So make sure you're really working hard on this, because I'll be taking a grade. This is what I'm looking at. And I let them know what I was looking at ahead of time, too. So that I don't think they were really, I never got in any kind of issue where they felt like they didn't know what they were being assessed on. Does that make sense? Because I think sometimes what happens, and I experienced this a lot in college, is they give you this assignment, but they don't really tell you sometimes what they're grading. And the next thing you know, you're like, or their test, they give you all this book work to do, but then their actual test is from their own mind. And it had nothing to do with the book. You know, the professor sometimes will do that. And you're like, dude, we didn't even talk about this. Well, you have to be able to know all of it, you know. And so I don't want kids to ever think that they're caught, that it's an I gotcha situation. So I always made sure that I let them know what I'm looking for.
Ladies and gentlemen, what's an assignment to you? This has been Craft the Draft. That's Paolo Cho. I'm Jacob Chastain. We're two educators down in the state of Texas. Do what we love, talking about reading, writing, workshop, and so much more. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Come back next week if you did. Join us on Patreon if you did. Leave a review if you did. Subscribe if you did. And if you didn't, well, we'll try again next week. Oh, my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, it has been wonderful. Ochoa, I'll talk to you soon. But as always, ladies and gentlemen, know that we are here.
For you.